Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast. Today, I'm very happy to have Phil Hack. Phil works at GitHub, making life easier for developers. He is, as I said the last time he was on the show, one of the very brightest people I know, and I'm looking forward to talking to him tonight. Phil, how are you?
I'm doing well, especially with that compliment. You need to meet more people.
I meet a lot of super bright people. And what I will say about Microsoft as an environment is it was an extraordinary group of people there. And, you know, not everybody, certainly. And when you have 90,000 employees, that's not possible. But I did meet some extraordinarily bright and interesting people working there.
Indeed.
And I suspect that GitHub is another enclave of some very bright people.
Oh, absolutely.
I had Paul Betts on recently, and I am extremely fond of Paul. I really like him. And when he talks, I'm totally fascinated, and I don't know what he's saying. I have no idea.
Yeah, I love working with that guy. He's kind of crazy, but he's fun.
Yes, he's an interesting guy. But let's talk about your role at GitHub. Is it what you've been doing all along, or have things evolved over time?
Things have evolved over time. The last time I spoke with you, I believe I was a developer on GitHub for Windows. Mm-hmm. But lately, I've been taking kind of a bigger picture look at things as it relates to the Windows platform and GitHub.
When we had Paul on very recently, he alluded to the idea that they're either coming closer to each other or there's a new version that sort of is a superset of both. Do I have that right?
So, yeah, what he was alluding to is this idea that both of the client applications are starting to iterate closer and closer to being very similar to each other, but just, you know, for different platforms. Mm-hmm. So, in fact, probably the thing he alluded to is our most recent releases of both products, if you take a look at them, they actually look a lot more similar than our 1.0 releases did. So we're getting to the point of convergence between the two applications. And so that's, I think, going to be a real good thing for us in terms of supporting the app and educating people about it. But also, you know, kind of helps people to really make sense of that, the apps. If they've been used one on one platform, they'll understand it on the other and vice versa.
Got it. Now, I work on both platforms. Typically, the only machine I use these days is a MacBook Pro, but I have Bootcamp running a good part of the time, or Parallels with Bootcamp running a good part of the time. So I could use either. Is one of them stronger than the other at the moment, or is it really fielder's choice?
Well, I would say that GitHub for Mac has more features. For example, GitHub for Windows doesn't yet have the line-by-line committing. Mm-hmm. But if you're a Windows developer, there are some things that GitHub for Windows has that's pretty nice. For example, we bring in the command line with our app, and I don't believe the Mac app does that. And there's some nice things there, like the inclusion of PoshGit, which I've talked about before.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I have a whole bunch of things I want to talk to you about, but can you possibly explain rebasing in, you know, 100 words or less?
Long story short, rebasing is replaying the changes in a set of commit onto the end of another branch or set of commits. So I'll give you the classic example of when you might do a rebase. I'll give you two examples. One is, let's say you've done some work locally on a branch that's also remote on the server, and you've done three commits, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you look, you notice that remotely someone else pushed a couple commits. Now, when you're ready to sync up your commits with the server, typically you're going to have to pull those commits first before you push. And when you do a normal pull, it's just going to create what's called a merge commit to merge your changes with the remote changes.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think about it, like, what if you had done your three commits after those two commits, right? What you might want to do is just like have your commits tacked on the end of whatever's on the server. So what you can do is you can do a git pull dash dash rebase. And what that does is that pulls down all the remote commits, and then it basically like replays what you've done. And you'll even see that in the output. It'll just basically replay those commits against what it pulled. So now you have this singular history. Of course, there's always a chance that, you know, what you've done conflicts, and that's where things get, you know, a little bit messier. But for the most part, you can just think of it as replaying those commits against whatever was on the server or whatever branch you're targeting.
That was very cool. That was very clear. The extent of the use of Git seems to be growing rapidly. And it was recently integrated into Visual Studio, I believe, as a part of Visual Studio.
That's correct. Initially, it was a Visual Studio extension, and I believe it's still an extension for older versions of Visual Studio. But as of Visual Studio 2013 or 12, I can't remember which one it was in first. It might have been 12, but it's now included in the box with definitely with Visual Studio 2013. In fact, if you check out Visual Studio 2013 Update 3, you'll see that CodeLens, of course, CodeLens is only available for Visual Studio Ultimate, unfortunately. But if you have Visual Studio Ultimate 2013 Update 3, yeah, Microsoft loves them long names still, you can have the CodeLens feature, which is pretty cool because now it supports Git. So for example, if you're looking at a method and there'll be this little like tiny bar right above the method of text that'll say, who last changed the method, how many commits have modified the method, and so on. And you could highlight the commits that have changed this method and navigate to them. It's actually quite cool.
That is very cool. And I do have, thank you, Microsoft, a copy of Ultimate, and I'm going to go play with that immediately because that sounds great.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
There's so much. Visual Studio has become, it's certainly not cluttered, but it's become information rich, and you add VSharper and Oz and the extensions, and there's just so much information coming at you, but it beats the heck out of the alternative.
Yeah, it does. It's pretty nice. It's funny because I've recently wrote a Visual Studio extension just for fun to try to understand, you know, sort of the innards of Visual Studio a little better, its extensibility model. And, you know, to some degree, there's parts of it that are really nice, but a lot of it is, you know, frankly, kind of a mess. And there are times where, you know, GitHub, we recently shipped an editor, an open source editor called Atom. And I kind of want to get Roslyn integrated in there and then start, like, you know, building out just the features that I really want from Visual Studio, because there's a lot of stuff in there that I really don't care for and don't need, but there's some stuff that's just really great and top of breed. And so I don't think any of that's my ability to contribute all that to Atom will happen anytime soon. So, you know, for now, Visual Studio is the one for me.
And what's the state of Atom?
So it's on Windows, it's an alpha is the latest release, mm-hmm. But it's open source and, you know, you can contribute to it. It's pretty nice. I like it a lot. It's a great editor, but it's not an IDE. And that's where Visual Studio really shines, right? Like you got the integrated debugger and the IntelliSense and, you know, those two things alone are pretty impressive.
Yes, I'm nodding vigorously. And I love the idea that you wrote a Visual Studio extension just for fun. Because it's a non-trivial exercise, as I understand it.
Well, that is definitely the case. So the extension is called Encourage, and you can go check it out on the Visual Studio Extension Gallery. And the idea came from a coworker who wrote this stupid little thing, as he described it, where every time he saves a document in TextMate, it pops up a little like message of encouragement, like, great job, or nice change. And it was so silly, but it made him laugh every time he did it. And I thought, oh, that's really cool. And he showed me the code. It was one line of Ruby and a little bit of configuration within TextMate. And so I thought, you know, I would love to – that would be a cool plugin to write for Visual Studio as my means of kind of getting acquainted with what it takes to extend Visual Studio. Mm-hmm. A couple hundred lines of code later with requiring the help of Jared Parsons, who's probably one of the foremost experts in Visual Studio extensions, I finally got this thing working, and it was real painful. And so I wrote a blog post about it. And just recently, I just wanted to add the ability to allow users to configure it, which seems very simple, right? Hey, here's a text area, write a few encouragements, and that's it. But it ended up being, that was quite an ordeal to get working correctly. Once again, I had to turn to Jared, who gave me some help, and we got it working. But now it's a lot of fun. Like, you can configure your own. It actually, I learned that Visual Studio supports native emoji. So if you paste in the Unicode emoji characters, it'll show up just fine in the little encouragements. And so I just posted a gist today of what I call discouragements, because I find them to be actually more funny. Just today I was writing some code, and I hit save on a line of code, and it popped up and it said, "Torvalds frowns at you." And I thought, yes, he does.
You are an uber geek, I must say. I'm going to change subject slightly. You have received, not in my mind, not nearly enough acknowledgement. You were the project manager, or program manager, I should say, for NuGet, which has become instrumental for so many aspects of Visual Studio and Xamarin Studio, and people getting the packages that they need and keeping them up to date. And now I understand that ASP.NET is actually being released through NuGet. Tell me a little bit about what that development was like.
It was a lot of fun to work on NuGet. And I have to say that of all the things I did at Microsoft, that was actually the thing I'm probably most proud of. I had a really good team to work with. Initially, it was like me, David Ebo, David Fowler. You'll probably hear Fowler's name a lot these days with his work on ASP.NET VNext and SignalR. He seems to find a way to get in the midst of the hottest, most interesting projects. Yeah, like NuGet was great. Like it was interesting because when it originally started, it was purely for ASP.NET MVC. But as we developed it, we realized that this is important for more and more than that. And so we had this interesting, in some ways uphill battle with other teams who felt that, oh, this belongs in their charter, this or that, this should be built on their technology. Mm-hmm. And so there were a lot of, what you might call political or technical battles that had to be fought back then. And people, we had a real strong vision for the way we thought it should be implemented. For example, it was a core principle that things should be installed on your machine in your project and not on your machine like an MSI does, because if someone else checks out your code from source control, they need to be able to hit F5 and it needs just work, right? Mm-hmm. And so originally, we told people, commit your packages. Now we tell them, don't worry about that. We'll use package restore. But the core principle of, if you check out the project from on another machine and you hit F5, everything still should just work. And so that was a key principle, things like that. And so I think now it's really, from the outside, it's really heartening to see, all these other teams at Microsoft starting to see the light and adopting it and, building on top of it. Like ASP.NET VNext, is taking it really far, for example, where NuGet really is the unit of deployment for it, as opposed to an assembly. And so they really, it's almost like NuGet packages are the new assembly in their model of building a web framework and platform.
Yes, it has gone from a novel and interesting way of distributing software for developers to absolutely ubiquitous and essential in a relatively short time. It's been quite remarkable. It must be rewarding to have had that experience. But you mentioned along the way that you worked with someone who is working on VNext for ASP.NET. Mm-hmm. And how much are you involved with looking at that? And do you have any thoughts about that?
So I haven't been a whole lot involved in it, but I'm very happy that it's happening. I remember there was a MVP summit and ASP.NET insiders meeting a while back. And, I, along with several other MVPs and insiders, had made the strong case that Microsoft really ought to consider making a break with the past and building the next gen web platform, even though that would be very unpopular among a lot of its customers who kind of want them to continue investing in, you know, ASP.NET. And I used to joke, like, my former manager, Scott Hunter, and I used to joke that, like, you know, we wanted to go rogue and build what we called ASP2.NET, which it would, you know, break back compat, because a lot of that compat stuff that we were dealing with, you know, was on top of this 13-year-old ASP.NET framework that had all this stuff that was really holding it back in some ways that, you know, we had to deal with. And we're like, you know, if we could start from scratch with something completely new, lightweight, like we could move a lot faster over time. You know, it might take a while to catch up, but over time we could move a lot faster because we wouldn't be dealing with bugs that, you know, only affect, you know, Windows Server 2002 or whatever it is, under stress in this scenario because of some operating system quirk, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we really liked the idea of a clean break, but at the time it wasn't something we could sell. And I think what's changed is that in some respects, I think Azure has really changed the formula, right? Like with Azure, you have a couple things. You no longer have operating system lock-in, right? Like, people can run Linux on Azure. They can choose, you know, Ruby on Rails. They can choose Node. They can do whatever the heck they want. And so if you want .NET to play a role in that world, you realize that, well, you can't tie people to a specific operating system. They're going to choose whatever works best for them. So, like, if you're going to compete with Node that's really lightweight, you're going to probably need something that's equally lightweight and compelling. And I think, you know, also with Azure, it's like, you know, you kind of have this clean box to work with. So why not have a new framework that targets the newest operating system, that targets the newest practices? And so in some ways, I guess I should rephrase that. With Azure, Microsoft doesn't need you to buy Windows Server to make their money, right? Like, as long as you're subscribing to Azure, they almost don't care what platform you're on. So I felt like that perhaps that opened it up for people to, for Microsoft to see that having, you know, a new framework that isn't tied to back compatibility could be a good thing, you know, and one that can run on multiple platforms. So ASP.NET VNext runs on Mono, and it, you know, you can develop on it using a Mac with Sublime Text just recently that came out. So, I think this is a real interesting development, and I think it's reflection of kind of the new Microsoft.
It's very exciting, and you're correct in my mind that it is reflective of a real change of thinking and change to some degree of direction. But how panicked should ASP.NET developers be that everything you know is wrong and everything is about to change?
Well, what's funny is that used to be my problem, but now it's not. It's not my problem, man. I don't work for them anymore. Well, so here's the thing about Microsoft, right? Like, any technology you choose, you have a 10-year window, right, of yes. support. So they're going to continue to do patches, continue to do bug fixes, and so on. Perhaps do, you know, I think they're still doing some amount of investment in web forms. I'm not really sure. You should, you know, ask Damian Edwards about mm-hmm. that, right? But I think in the long run, you're going to see that the amount of investment will move towards these newer frameworks. And you have about 10 years. But I think for a lot of customers, you know, when they're hitting the limits of what ASP.NET can do, how many, you know, for example, site density on a single server or VM is low compared to, let's say, Node.js. And so a lot of these companies are going to, about, you know, in the next few years would hit the point where they were going to make a switch anyways, right? I've talked to a lot of people who've, you know, switched to Node.js from ASP.NET. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Microsoft's at the point where they're like, well, either we just like try to stem the tide and die really slowly, or we try to build the framework that they're going to switch to. And I think that's the tactic they're taking. They want to build the platform you're going to switch to. So if you're a current ASP.NET developer, I wouldn't panic, so to say, but I would look at a migration plan for the next 10, you know, in 10 years, you want to be on the next thing, whether it's ASP.NET VNext or something else. you should be looking, you know, start the planning for that.
And does, and MVC, ASP.NET MVC, is that still in that division that you're making? Is that part of the old ASP.NET?
So in my mind, ASP.NET MVC is interesting because it's sort of a bridge, right? Like you can, right now, ASP.NET MVC 4 like runs kind of on system.web, right? So, mm-hmm. so let's use system.web to represent the old ASP.NET, right? With ASP.NET MVC 5, they've sort of broken, I think with 5, they've broken that tie. And now it's built on top of OWEN. And then I think MVC 5... See, I haven't, as you can tell, I haven't been keeping as close ties with it. I know ASP.NET MVC builds on top of OWEN. I believe it might still run on system.web. I'm not exactly sure about that. But it will also run on the new stack on Project K.
Where can folks, I'm going to have to hit you for some links where people can learn more about this. This is, and we'll definitely get Damien on and have Scott Hunter come back and talk a bit about where things are going. Because yeah, it seems like things are changing quickly.
Well, you know, one of the good news is if you're interested in this work, you can go to github.com/ASP.NET, and you'll see that they have several repositories there, including Entity Framework, SignalR, ASP.NET MVC, and Project K runtime. So you can actually look at the code. I think they have some docs and stuff like that. So you can actually watch them as they develop this in the open, accepting pull requests. I think that's a really great development. That's the other big aspect of Project K that I really like is that, you know, they're doing it in a true open source fashion where it's not only licensed, you know, under a permissive open source library, but that they're also accepting pull requests.